Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Pauly Howard with you. We are live in downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. 3-hour banger lined up for you today. Good guests on the program. Aaron Renning, professional sports bettor, coming up in an hour. One of the best there is at betting the NBA. Brian Mahoney, who covers the league. We'll talk deadline moves. Will the Knicks make a deal? Is Giannis going to be out of a Bucks uniform by the deadline? That is in 90 minutes. And JT the Brick on the Raiders coaching situation. And would they listen to any other teams if they called about the number one overall pick, Pauly? We have door number one, door number two today. Win some, lose some in 45 minutes.
Yep.
You hanging in? Doing all right?
You all right, buddy? Good to see you. We're okay here with the weather. Brick is going to be very strong on that second question. Will they trade the pick?
Okay. Yep. Well, so how about this? And we have a lot of stuff to get into with the hoops card tonight. Very good games in action. We'll touch on the NFL, obviously, in the Super Bowl. This two-week window now, obviously, that we're in for the Super Bowl. Earlier today, I saw a release on updated coaching odds in the NFL. Joe Brady was 12-1 hours ago.
Yeah.
12-1. He was like the fifth shot on the board to become the next head coach of the Buffalo Bills. And he's their guy. So I think it's actually a pretty good move. I thought Joe Brady should get a job in this coaching cycle. And lo and behold, it's going to be the team that he's been with. And now I saw a bunch of stuff come out from people either speculating or around the Bill situation saying that I don't think Brady was really McDermott's guy. And they were insinuating that Brady never really had a chance to run his full offense under McDermott. And so what will it look actually a little bit different? Could he actually make Josh Allen better moving forward?
Interesting.
How about that?
Very good. It's an interesting hire. And considering, remember, he took over for Dorsey when he got fired and he lost his mind in the booth in the Miami game. But I love that it's going to be expected to be Jim Leonard to be the defensive coordinator taking over. That's a good 1-2 punch.
No doubt.
You mentioned the 12-1, and hopefully we get some other news here while we're on the air. So we're down to three openings, and we'll see what the Raiders do. But the Browns, Haslam keeps changing his mind. Davis Webb is the favorite in some spots to be the Raider coach. LaFleur looks like he's going to Arizona, so now it's heating up here.
And as for the big game itself in a couple of weeks, I'm always intrigued to see like where this number is going to play out. Big bets that are going to come in. Circa took $1.1 million on the Patriots money line at plus 188. Jeffrey Benson here at Circa was tweeting about that and how they really didn't move it that much because it is a Super Bowl and they're not going to move the numbers that much based on one big bet like that. And I see when the games played out, in fact, when it was the AFC title game and the NFC game had yet to be played on Sunday, I was thinking to myself, well, regardless of who wins the NFC game, I think the public's going to be all over the winner of that game, and the sharps will then be making a case for the Patriots. And look, I mean, you're going to talk to different sharp people, and they'll have different perspectives and might be on either side of it. But the way it's shaping up only 2 days into this betting window at DraftKings, for example, when you go to vsin.com and check out the betting splits, early on, 79% of the handle on Seattle, 73% of the bets on Seattle. You're at Circa, and this has a lot to do with, obviously, that $1.1 million bet, but 65% of the handle on the Patriots, 62% of the bets on Seattle. And I was also thinking, like, does it ever go back down to like 3.5, or is 4 going to be the low watermark? Or can it possibly go? Is it going to ping pong the entire week between like 4, 4.5? Does it go back to 5, maybe touch 5.5 even? I don't think it gets to 6 ever.
Yeah, right. You're right, though. It's Seattle looks so good. Everyone's aware of the Patriots schedule and all the injuries. And it feels like it's just going to be, Seattle's got to win, and Seattle's got to blow them out. I mean, you made the case yesterday that Seattle can blow them out and get aggressive with Alts. Is Drake May hurt? Vrabel, he's not going to give you a real answer anyways,
no,
right?
No, he's not.
So maybe he is hurt, how he struggled in the last couple of games. You know, just the facts, though, just the facts. We got a good tweet before the show. This is circulating on social media, Brandon Anderson. Patriots schedule, week 1, fired coach, week 2, fired coach, week 3, fired coach, week 5, fired coach, week 6, NFC South, week 7 through 9, fired coach, week 10, week 11, Jets. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. You know, I know Gil got into it today as well, but the third easiest schedule, DVOA since 1979. I mean, that's going to get a lot of play as we got a week and a half to kill before the game, and Darnold looks so good, and the Seattle defense has been great, unless they're playing Matt Stafford.
No kidding. He's the one guy that can light him on fire, I guess.
Yeah.
So I will say this, tip of the cap to the audience, a lot of people from back east listening to the show, watching potentially on Nesson as well, going back over the replay. Too many to name. We did get a lot of feedback from people in that New England area saying, I completely agree with what you guys are saying. Like, I get it. This is like gravy. We're very fortunate. Uh-huh. We're lucky. We've caught a ton of breaks. And if we can scoop a Super Bowl this year, it's just icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But they also would say, you guys are, I mean, you can't debate the numbers on the schedule and everything else that's gone their way.
Yes.
So they did acknowledge it quite in full force yesterday. So I read all the emails, and I think I responded to all of them. So thank you. By the way, if you ever want to get in touch with the show, ftm@vsin.com is the email.
And how about Matt Parsons? And there was another guy, too, saying that they got, and he sent the ticket in. Late February, he bet the Patriots 150-1. He grabbed
that. Was available on FanDuel.
Yeah.
Yep. And DraftKings tweeted this out earlier today.
Uh-huh.
Somebody bet, I think it was January 21st of last year. So it's been in the account for more than a year now. 10,000 on Patriots to win the Super Bowl at 80-1.
Oh, wow.
That's out there. I wonder, well, when Mike Palm's in studio tomorrow, I wonder if the bet on New England here came from the guy as a hedge.
I was thinking the same thing.
Who was dancing all around town on the same day and bet Seattle up the wazoo back in August.
Yeah, that was a good point made. I believe that was off air, that the guy not only hit it here, he hit several spots with Seattle futures.
So this is Johnny Avello, head odds maker over at DraftKings, talking about his Super Bowl point spread expectations.
At 4.5. We're getting quite balanced, a good balance at that number, which means that if that's the way it's going to be, we're going to start balancing out at 4.5, and maybe they're going to start taking the dog on the money line, which I expect they will. We could have a double jeopardy problem. I mean, we're already stuck on the Patriots in the future, and then on the money line, they're probably going to bet the Patriots there also. So we got to be a little bit careful on how high we go and continue to make adjustments on the line.
A graphic we have up there shows 76% of the bets and 81% of the money on the Seahawks right now. Johnny, do you think some books might hit six on this before kickoff next week?
No, I do not think that at all. I think maybe 5's a possibility, maybe 5.5, or there's a possibility it goes back down again too. No, I don't see 6 at all here, Maddie.
So every book can be different, right? Mm-hmm. We told you about the liability here at Circa. Like, they don't want the Seahawks to win this game based on future bets. Johnny said last night it's the exact opposite. They do really well to Seattle. They do not do well at all to the Patriots. And the reason why they opened up 3.5 is because they wanted to attract Seahawks money right out of the gates. And they got it.
Very good. Excellent. The other thing is maybe we should have seen this coming as well. I mentioned yesterday being a Viking fan. And they say, Darnold, okay, that's it. You stunk up the joint the last couple of weeks. We're going to move on. Did you see the Scott Hansen tweet? He retweeted the NFL. Before we started the season on the Thursday night game, Cowboys and Eagles, the NFL put out a tweet. And if you look, it's the Santa Clara Stadium, and you see the Lombardi Trophy and all the big-time players representing each team. But if it says 32 teams with February dreams were so back. And if you look all the way up at the front, in the very front, it's Sam Darnold and Drake May. Are you kidding?
Well, I look at it the exact opposite way. All of those players are in the distance on teams that did not have high expectations. The faces of the league with the highest expectations were the guys that you could see in the very beginning, foreground of the photo.
Yeah, Barkley,
that's
Purdy.
Sure. That's the way that I look at it.
Yeah, you could do that too. But there's Burrow, there's Barkley, there's Purdy, there's Watt. Excellent. And then right up at the front, standing side by side, May and Darnold.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
So here's another piece of audio for you. This is Aaron Schatz, who is the man who created DVOA, which is referenced all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been doing this now for 23 years. He was on earlier today on a numbers game with Gil and Kelly, and he was talking about where the Patriots rank.
They rank 81st out of 96.
So the 16th worst. Yes.
So the 16th worst, but with a kind of asterisk, they have been much better in the second half of the season. I have a rating I call weighted DVOA that's weighted towards recent games. Using that rating, they had the biggest difference between weighted DVOA and regular DVOA of any playoff team ever.
Ooh, okay. So there's one for the...
how bad they were in the first couple weeks.
Yeah, and to the credit, right. Yeah. I mean, like their defense, for example, no doubt. I mean, well, phenomenal.
Has this happened? If they win the Super Bowl, they lost to a 2-15 team. I mean, think about that, if that's ever happened before.
Good
one. The worst loss ever for a team either in the Super Bowl or that wins the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's nuts to think about that. Number one, it cost them home field. Still worked out for them, but they lost to a 2-15 team at home.
I also saw this in response to something on social media regarding their schedule. And that is, well, I guess we're going to go full circle right now, right? Because the 2007 Patriots, they were the best regular season team ever.
Yes, I agree.
They did not win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
They were the best team to ever make a Super Bowl, and yet they didn't win.
Right.
The Patriots are one of the worst teams to ever make the Super Bowl, and watch them win it.
Yeah. I still was stunned what transpired in that Super Bowl. The pressure the Giants got,
mm-hmm.
the front four, and the pressure they put on Brady, considering they had just played, and they won in New York, and Brady and Moss had a huge game.
They scored 38 points, didn't they, in that regular season game?
Yeah.
Did whatever they wanted, and it completely flipped.
That wasn't fair. That just, you get the best quarterback of all time, either the best or the second best wide receiver of all time, and the best coach of all time.
I remember they
couldn't get it done.
I remember like watching that game. I know exactly where I was, and everybody had Giants money line where I was
ridiculous.
At. In the second quarter, I'm like, is anything going to happen in the game? Like, what is going on? Yeah. How come we can't get any points
here? We only had two drives in the first quarter, I think.
Yeah, yeah. What we're seeing tonight is nearly unprecedented in college basketball. We'll discuss coming up next.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You always follow the money.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
It's good to have you on board. Thanks for watching on YouTube TV, listening on Sirius XM channel 158, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and any of our great affiliates across the country. Coming up in this hour and 15 minutes, we'll discuss like the ceiling for the seed for Miami of Ohio, undefeated in action tonight. And we'll run down some other games as well on Hoops. Brian Mahoney, who covers the league, we'll talk trade deadline with him in 30 minutes. And right now we go out to the Progressive guest line. More basketball as a professional sports bettor Aaron Renning joins the program now. ER, it's been a minute. Thanks for the time, pal. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always good to be with you. And talk some NBA here.
How has the season, we're like 3 months into it now, how has the season been going for you?
It's been a home run, hoping on a grand slam. I mean, I've been fortunate. You guys know I'm not on here to sell anything or whatever. I tell you, if I was not having a great year, mm-hmm. but I think like starting on November 1st or right in there, I won 10 straight weeks. So, I mean, I don't remember hardly doing that. That's hard to do.
Yeah, no kidding. And also you, at the tail end of this run, we were communicating, and you're like, hey, pay attention to the Knicks. They've lost so many games in a row after the Cup run. You were at that game or those games out here in Las Vegas when they win the Cup. What put you on the fade train of the Knicks after that game?
You know, again, it's not anything like crazy genius. I was 10 feet away from the Knicks celebrating the in-season tournament down there, and, you could just see it. Like I say, Spike Lee's running around like a maniac. They were just acting like they had just won the NBA Finals. And, you know, again, you have to remember the last 2 years, you know, the Bucks, when they won it, had a bad run mm-hmm. after the Lakers, same thing. So, and it's not that I don't like this Knicks team, but, you know, they're a little bit banged up. They have zero depth. And, you know, I was having a drink after the game with our pal, our common guy, Sooner Adam. And I just was thinking, I think we're going to make some money off this game tonight. And then I remember looking at their schedule and it was just really, really rough. And I go, I think we can make a lot of money off the Knicks after this win. And yeah, so I hit like five or six in a row against the Knicks after that. And at that point, you're just riding it out. So I hit 11 bets in a row. I don't remember or recall doing that with one team or even on an over under.
Well, good catch by you. Pays to go to these games and notice stuff like that and file it away. So let me talk to you about the East then. The Knicks right now are 6.5 back of the Pistons. They're the number one seed as we speak. Celtics are number two. Raptors are number three seed. And everybody behind the Pistons from like 2 through 5, they're kind of bunched up all together, including the Cavaliers. What does the top of the Eastern Conference look like with your power ratings?
Yeah, again, I always say you always have to remember what regular season power rating to a playoff power rating are generally going to be different. And that's how you kind of have to look at things. But yeah, you can't take anything away from what the Pistons have done so far this season, leading the Eastern Conference by 5 games. Again, we go back to the NBA championship last year, Oklahoma City against Indiana, athletic teams that get up and down the court, defend, et cetera. And the Pistons kind of fit that mold. I mean, they play defense a lot different than the Thunder do, but boy, it is hard to get an inside basket. They protect the rim so well with what the Pistons do. So you really have to have them as the number one power rated team. And, you know, you get in the playoffs, we'll see with Boston, if Tatum does come back and give them anything, that could certainly vault them into being around there. I still think this Knicks team will be fine in the playoffs and certainly still have a chance to come out of the Eastern Conference here. Again, like I said, they're a team without any depth. They didn't want to, you know, be so hard on their starters with minutes. Do they have some flaws? Absolutely. You know, you always worry about the, you know, the Brunson Towns pairing. We'll see what they do at the trade deadline, but you know, you still look at their starting five, top six guys, good enough to win the Eastern Conference. You still have to talk about Cleveland. The one thing I'll say about Cleveland is, pretty much all season long, they have talked about really not caring about the regular season. Mm-hmm. Can they turn it on when the playoffs come around? Because, look, they were all out last year in the regular season. And then, you know, once again, the postseason hits and they're banged up. Guys are injured. So they just said, you know, we're going to try to peak at playoff time. So I think all those four teams really have a chance to win the Eastern Conference. After that, I mean, I'd put the Charlotte Hornets up against most of those teams.
All right.
Wow, okay.
Very interesting. So you mentioned Detroit is number two in defense. What do you think? They just moved to 7.5 at one book, 214.5 at Denver.
Yeah, I actually do have a bet on that game under tonight. You know, it was interesting with the Denver Nuggets because after Joker went out, you think, well, I'll fade him and maybe bet under the total. It really didn't play out that way for, you know, the first couple of weeks after Joker went out. He's supposed to be back maybe in the next week. But here of late, I've definitely been able to ride them under the total. 4 straight games going under the total for this team. And we've kind of seen defense adjust. They're really trying to take Jamal Murray out of the game. They've trapped him, get the ball out of his hands. So once you see that, and then what, their other 4 starters are out that they started the year with or expected to start the year with. So it's been a slog, and it's been really hard for this team to score. And and Paulie, as you mentioned, going up against the second best NBA team here right now from a defensive perspective, I had to play this game under the total once again. And with Detroit, obviously how they play defense, it's been very good. They've been an under machine. And Kate Cunningham still has that bad wrist. And if you watch him play, you just kind of pick it up. Some nights he kind of has it, some he don't, but he's having a much harder time shooting the basketball.
Okay.
Excellent. This is a funky number, at least a trend. Portland is 1 and covered 8 in a row in D.C. They're 6.5 tonight in Washington, 232. What's the case for the Blazers here?
Yeah, this is – I'll give you guys one of my favorite angles here I've used the last handful of years. And this is just something I came up with and it's worked out well. I don't play this blindly, but so here's what I'm looking for. I want a Western Conference team against an Eastern Conference team. Obviously you have the superior conference. Sometimes you can be a little bit undervalued that way. I want them in a back-to-back situation. They played the night before, and I want them on the road. I think all those three factors can be just a little bit underrated in the marketplace. A team on a back-to-back, sometimes you get a little overreaction. The road, sometimes, you know, the road teams have always done a little bit better here the last few years. And the final thing I want is a team off a loss. I want that team off a loss as well. So far this year, it's 8-4 against the spread. Rockets were in that same situation on Friday when they beat the Pistons outright, getting a handful of points. So, like I said, I don't play that blindly, but then I handicap the game. And I really like this Portland team, really good defensive team, kind of under the radar as well. And as we've seen, the Wizards still no clue what they're doing, trading for Trae Young recently. So Trae Young's on the Jordan Poole. They made that trade a number of years ago in his bad contract. That's kind of the career territory he's looking at right now.
I think you're spot on with that. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Professional sports bettor Aaron Renning, our guest on the Progressive Guest Line. What do you make of the Thunder right now? I know they have a zillion injuries. They also can't shoot the basketball. They're laying four. They're losing these games outright. Back-to-back now, double-digit favorites. Now they're laying 15 tonight against the Pelicans. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good situation, if you could say, for the Thunder. I mean, the last time they lost a couple of losses, they came back, and they still, remember, they struggled against Utah. They lost against Phoenix. They lost to Charlotte, and then mm-hmm. it was a 19-point favorite, struggled against Utah. Back-to-back losses at home against Indiana and Toronto, so no big juggernauts. I had a friend text me and said, the Thunder got to come out and play well against Toronto. And I said the same thing, Mitch. I said, I just don't like where this roster's at right now. I don't like Caruso. I don't like Hartenstein and Jalen Williams all being out for this team. I mean, yes, they have tremendous depth. They were doing it early in the year, but I can't lay 14 and a half, 15 points in a very good spot. I just did not get there in the Thunder tonight.
Do you think they can be had come playoff time, assuming they're going to be closer to full strength? But do you think once everybody, all these teams like Denver and San Antonio, if they're at full strength and they meet in the playoffs, like they could beat OKC in a 7-game series?
It's so hard. Just the way they defend, and quite honestly, the NBA kind of lets them get away. And if they can get to full strength, I think they're going to be, they're probably going to be the favorite to win the NBA title the next 5 years. But with that said, if Halliburton doesn't get hurt in game seven, they might not even win the title last year. So it's not like they were just blowing these teams out of the water. You know, I'll say this. I think Denver, if they can get healthy, I think they have the starting five, and now they're going to have some depth. I think maybe this Jokic injury helps them in the long run. Maybe he's, is a little bit more rested into the playoffs, and they figured out some different avenues when he's off the court to be able to do things. If it doesn't happen for Denver, I mean, it's got to happen here in the next one or two years, but they definitely have the starting five and the team to be able to give Oklahoma City another test. And again, when I was going to the in-season tournament out here in Las Vegas, I did kind of say to myself, the only team that's going to beat the Thunder the next 5 years in a playoff series is whatever team Wemby's on. And so I would give the Spurs a puncher's chance. I don't know if it's going to be this year, and boy, I'd love to, hopefully he'll stay healthy, but what a talent that guy is.
No kidding. BR, love talking to you, man. That was awesome. Thanks for the perspective. Good luck tonight. We appreciate it.
Good to be on with you guys. Take care.
There you go.
Thank you.
BR Sports 1 on X, Aaron Renning, Dynamite on the NBA. So what would the seed be? What's the ceiling for Miami of Ohio this year? I think the answer is going to surprise you. We'll kick it around next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Talk some more NBA here. The card tonight. Also, deadline coming up. Not too far away now, actually. Brian Mahoney, longtime friend of the show, has covered the league for a long time as well for the Associated Press. Pops on the program now on the Progressive Guest Line. Hey, Brian, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well. So we just talked to a professional sports bettor 30 minutes ago. His name's Aaron Renning. He was telling us that he went to the NBA Cup out here in Las Vegas, and he noticed something about the Knicks, how they were celebrating. He's like, I think there's going to be a potential here to make some money betting against this team after the Cup. And they did not cover for 11 straight games, and he cleaned up. Why do you think they went into a funk after winning that thing out here?
Wow, that's a good move by him, first of all. But yeah. I think two reasons, Mitch. I think one, first of all, I said from the start, I don't see why any East team wants to make the final. You're giving yourself an extra road trip, a West trip in the middle of the season. And I think they kind of wore themselves out a little bit, first of all. But then second of all, Josh Hart got hurt about, on Christmas Day, and he was out for 8 games. And I think he's just so indispensable to them. They don't really play fast unless Josh Hart's in the lineup. And I think they became too predictable, and the bench was weakened, obviously. So I think all of that sort of went into it, and they went into a really terrible slump. 9 out of 11 was really bad. They figured out a little bit now, it seems like. But, yeah, that was the end of December was an awful stretch for them.
Can you also speak to the timing where it's unacceptable to be in third place? You go to the conference finals and fire your coach. Dolan doubles down and says, absolutely, we have enough, and this is a team that can go to the finals. And then they turned on Cat, and also the bad stretch happened. This is all going on at the same time.
Yeah, that was funny, Paul. And Jim Dolan never talks. He did a radio interview, said we should go to the finals, and then they went into a terrible stretch kind of coinciding with that. So we got to chuckle about that a little bit here. You know, better off saying nothing. Yeah, keep going with that. But, there's a lot of pressure on Cat. He is a guy who looked, these were all-in moves they made last year, acquiring him and then acquiring Mikal Bridges. They gave up everything they had left really to give up to make those two moves. So when he doesn't play bad, he takes a brunt of that. And, you know, he's an offensive guy. They don't expect him to be a shutdown defender. But if he's not giving them good numbers offensively, you can tell it bothers the team. They really kind of go into a little bit of a funk, knowing they can't count on him that night. And it's certainly that happened way too often during that bad stretch.
So with a deadline looming, do you think they are active and make a move that could help them navigate their way through what is becoming a tricky Eastern Conference the way it appears at the top?
I think they're going to try and do something, Mitch, but I don't know, again, to what I just said previously, they have lost the ability to make their big move. Mm-hmm. They gave up all the assets for Mikal Bridges. There's just not a lot they can do. But that said, the two moves they made in the summer haven't worked out the way they want to. Jordan Clarkson and Yabusele, those guys haven't really nailed down Mike Brown's confidence level. So they're going to have to find a way to at least tinker with the bench a little bit, I think, to sort of build out a second unit, what they thought they did in the summertime.
Dolan's an interesting fellow. If you get bounced early in the playoffs, would Mike Brown be safe?
You know, it's an interesting question. Obviously, you'd hate to admit a mistake that quickly. And certainly that's what it would be was if he fired a coach after 1 year. But, if it doesn't work out, and I'm not saying it, it may still look, they still have a good record. And I think their best basketball might still be ahead of them. Who knows? But, when you make a move like they did, if it doesn't work out with the guys on the roster you need to work out with, your top guys, then you have to say maybe we did bring the wrong guy in. So certainly Mike Brown will want to avoid getting that possibility happen.
Well, that's the position Dolan put you in, though, right? I mean, the only way you can improve is by going to the finals. Would you get rid of Tibbs when you go to the conference finals and saying it's not good enough? So that's all the pressure that Brown's under.
And the other part of it is, even if you take the win-loss record out of it, Mike Brown's mandate certainly seemed to be to not be Thibodeau, to play the bench, develop the young guys, do that kind of thing. Well, if suddenly he's reducing the rotation because he doesn't have the confidence in the two bench guys you brought in, then what happens? Then it becomes more like Thibodeau again. So then you say, why did we make the move in the first place? So, again, he's got to be able to find a way to win games with doing what they wanted him to do, playing more guys and young guys, and that's hard to do if those guys aren't playing well.
Talking to your sources and all your people in the league, do you think Milwaukee's going to get rid of Freak?
I think people feel like it's going to happen eventually, that it's hard to stop right now. But whether it happens now, whether it happens in the summertime, no one's really sure. No one's positive exactly what Giannis wants. No one is positive if Milwaukee thinks they have one shot left to convince him. But I think that's the move they have to try. I think they have to wait as long as possible, see if they can make some kind of Hail Mary move that shows him that maybe there is a chance they can improve. but that's just, it's hard to imagine they can do that at this point.
The biggest name that you could potentially see getting dealt before the deadline would be who?
I would say John Morant. I think they're both sides looking in that one. And you know, he hasn't had a great year. I think he's taken a step back as a player, but based on what he's earned in his career, I think someone will take a shot at that. And after that, maybe Anthony Davis is a big name, not really a player anymore this season, but certainly a big name still, and maybe someone will take a shot at that as well.
If you were running the Celtics, how would you handle the Tatum situation?
I think all along I would have said he can play when he's ready. But now, I think it would have been easier to say, all right, even if he is ready, there's no point. We're in eighth place or sixth place, whatever. But if you're in second place and they say he's ready, I don't understand why you wouldn't. I think part of the reason this team is playing so well is because they do see how good he looks in his workouts. I think they know there's a light here for us, that he can come back earlier than we thought, and let's just be as close as we can if and when that happens. And they've done a great job of that. And, if he does come back, then yeah. I mean, no one else really says they can't win. they certainly already have a great bench, a great coach. Yep. Their defense is very good. You add him, then look out. That East is winnable for them.
No doubt. Brian Mahoney, our guest, covers the NBA for the AP. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. On that note, you voted for awards in the past. How would you look at the Coach of the Year as we speak? A lot of basketball to be played as well, but would you lean towards Bickerstaff at this point? Would you say Mazzulla, my God, because of the injuries and the Tatum, obviously, news from last year? Or what about the job David Adelman is currently doing with Denver?
I think Dan Lyon's done a great job, that whole year long. I would lean toward one of the two things you said first, Bickerstaff or Mazzulla. And, I don't know if Mazzulla's necessarily got the credit in the past with the talent that this team had. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you look at what they had to give up over the summertime, what they're missing now in Tatum, and then you look at where they are, I think certainly he deserves a vote. And with Bickerstaff, listen, we saw Detroit getting better last year, but this was supposed to be, everyone thought, an incremental rise. This has been a massive leap, it seems like, this year. So I think either one of those guys, I would go one and two in some order. I don't really know which one at the moment.
How do you look at, there's been a lot of steam in the last like 12 hours, well, talking points anyway, because Luka was so good again last night. How do you look at him as an MVP candidate? Lakers might win that division, but I think the resistance is the guy is terrible on defense, especially when you compare him to like other true MVP candidates.
I wonder about that. I wouldn't rate that too much against him because everything he does so well. To me, if a guy's giving you, 35 and 12 a night, and your team's winning games, I can't penalize him for not being a great defender. But certainly, a lot of voters might. And I get that. Listen, is he? If you want to say, okay, if you're neck and neck between him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and you say one guy defends like crazy, one guy doesn't. I understand that, yes, but I couldn't hold it too much against Luka because of how good he kind of is at everything else.
Well said.
Very good. You can follow Brian on X. He's at Brian C. Mahoney. He's done a great job covering the NBA for a long time for the Associated Press. Great catching up, Brian. Thank you. Enjoy the games tonight.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Well done.
Join
us
on the Progressive Guest Line. I think that's how it's going to play out, by the way.
He's averaging 34 a game.
Well, Luka.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, you think he can win the MVP?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about that.
If he continues to play like this, I ruled him out because I was concerned about the record. But what he's doing in the last couple of weeks, and he's improved defensively, also helps that he lost all that weight. But what he did against the Bulls, what he did against Dallas, I mean, if you're going to average 34, 8, and 9, come on.
Well, what is SGA, remember, hasn't played a lot of fourth quarters because they were blowing so many teams out. You have that, and also, like, at the end of the year...
It helps where he plays.
What if the Pistons have 65 wins?
Yeah, good call.
Or the Celtics somehow get the one or the two seed.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to consider Jaylen Brown or Cade Cunningham.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have some breaking news, and we're going to get to it coming up next.
Absolutely outrageous.
You saw this?
I saw it. It's absolutely outrageous.
It's petty, it's childish, and it's, I can't even believe that this happened. And I'm curious if there's also like betting odds on this because it would have been probably 1,000 to 1 for him not to get in. And if you ever want another moment in time that explains why any Hall of Fame has become an absolute joke over the years, this takes the cake. And this has now surpassed any other sport for the most comical Hall of Fame. What are we doing here? This is a fake world that we're living in. We'll get into it coming up next here on VSiN.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
It's good to have you on board. We're live in Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino is the spot. Starting the hour off with a bang as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line. A longtime radio veteran, JT the Brick, Raider Nation Radio out here in Las Vegas. On X at JT the Brick joins the program now. Hey, Brick, good to talk to you, man. How are you?
Great being on, guys. I hope you're doing well, doing great today. Thanks.
We have to get into the Raiders coaching situation, the number one pick overall, but we have to begin with this. You were telling us in the break, you're a big Hall of Fame guy. You go back almost every single year. What happened in the last 20 minutes is a black eye for the sport, in my opinion. Bill Belichick did not get elected and put in to the Hall of Fame on the first time around. Your thoughts?
It's purely politics from the cronies who are in there and the voters to make a statement over Deflategate and Spygate, which you could say is fair to debate that. I mean, you could say debating Pete Rose over the decades with an asterisk. He was a player. He wasn't a coach. How he gets in. This is so disgraceful, Mitch, that the greatest coach, championship coach in NFL history, who lapped Lombardi, lapped Shula, not in wins, but all these championships, has to wait. You know what can happen when you wait and you have to wait a year? God forbid something happens to your health. Mm-hmm. I watched Tom Flores get in the Hall of Fame in a wheelchair. They made him wait in a wheelchair into his 80s as Dungy and Cowher were already in and not Tom Flores. God forbid something happens to Belichick and his health and you're going to make him lose out on a year of his life being enshrined in Canton, Ohio in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, where I've already seen they have an area already put aside for him and are going to make him wait.
Great point, too, with Dungy in the room as well. And how great Flores was. Excellent point as well. They also have to be careful. You know, we've been following sports a long time. I would say cork in my bat, performance-enhancing drugs, that's cheating. There's a difference between cheating and gamesmanship. So for them to use that word when describing Belichick, with people in that room, I think, is also a disgrace.
Well, look, Paulie, I think there's more to this story. And dive into Patriot fatigue for some of these Patriots. First off, Adam Vinatieri should have been first ballot. You don't make Adam Vinatieri wait. You want to make Eli Manning wait? Okay. Adam Vinatieri was the greatest kicker of his era. Why is he waiting, right? He should get in. And then when you look at what they did to Robert Kraft, we know why Robert Kraft had to pay his penance for his shenanigans down in Jupiter, Florida. But he should have been fast forward right in with all of his Super Bowls and championships. And he's elderly, and they're making him wait. But what they're doing to Belichick, and I'll even go one step further, the fact that he's not candidate A for multiple jobs. Look, you don't have to like him. You don't have to like the girlfriend, the situation in his personal life. But the fact that Atlanta passed on him in the initial cycle when he could have been coaching for Arthur Blank and could have been the head coach in Atlanta, and they settled on the fired Kevin Stefanski, and Belichick can't get the Bills job over Joe Brady. Say what you will about Belichick. He's had a brilliant overall career, and he should be in the Hall of Fame first ballot. It's disgraceful. And it shines a negative light on the Hall of Fame, and they don't like that. The Hall of Fame wants to be prestigious.
Mm-hmm. All great points. Yep. Okay, so you have the pulse of the Las Vegas Raiders as well as anybody. A lot of these job openings now, we've had 10. A bunch of those are filled, and they fired Pete Carroll now weeks ago. At this stage of the game, like, what are we talking about here? Who is the favorite, you think, overall to get the job as we speak?
Well, Mitch, over the last couple of years, man, and no one's dealt with more coaches in media history than me, 17, and I've dealt with all of them. I mean, that's a big number. I mean, Kirk Gowdy can't say that. Keith Jackson can't say that. You could say that about me. We go back a long way, and it's hard to predict what they're going to do because all of the coaches that they fired quickly in the past, other people could be looking at that, but all the coaches that they fired recently deserve to be fired. They didn't do a good job. Pete Carroll could have been here for 3 years. They went to go get Geno. Geno didn't work. I thought Geno would play much better, let alone competitive. He couldn't last a year. Then you look at what happened before that with Josh McDaniels. He's coaching in the Super Bowl again, a very great play caller, wasn't a good head coach. When Mark Davis watched the whole thing unravel with him in his second year, they said, no, we got to get rid of him, and they got rid of him. So the coaches that are being let go for a reason. Coming to this hiring cycle, I've always said Kubiak from day one. He checks the boxes for me. His dad, coaching, best friends with Elway. He grew up in a locker room. Number two, he understands culture. He's been in a great tree. I love a great coaching tree. The job he did this year is fabulous. Now, when you talk about his personality, I don't know much about that. Can he lead an entire organization in an offense, defense, and special teams meeting? Well, we don't know. We'll see what happens. Eventually, he's going to get a job, but it's delicate now because Brady's worked a lot of those games. Brady's vetted him as a play caller because he's calling the games. I think he should be the top choice. If not, I'm okay with Davis Webb because it's a big swing. And the Raiders took a big swing with Al Davis, with John Madden. They took a big swing with John Gruden, and those swings worked out. But he doesn't have a lot of experience. And as you guys saw the breaking news, Denver fired their offensive coordinator. A lot of people think to keep Davis Webb in the building. And then I'll throw it back to you guys. What about Sean McDermott? Did anybody watch football the last 9 years? It wasn't perfect. I'm not saying perfect, but is it because Pete Carroll failed with the Raiders that they don't want to go with a guy who's been successful and has been around the block? I'd go Kubiak 1. I'd go Webb 1A. And then after that, I mean, the candidates, you got to pair them with Mendoza. We know you're pairing them with Mendoza. Get me a young offensive play caller, and I'll take that. And I think that'll be the birth of the Raiders turning it around with the new look offense.
What if the Jets call with a Godfather offer?
I would pass. I mean, the Godfather offer is what? 4 first rounders, a player. And to do all that, if there were multiple quarterbacks, if you told me there was a quarterback, I'll give you an example. I talked about this on my shows. If you said Jackson Dart is available at 17 or 14, okay. If you told me there was a Bo Nix guy out there at 12, all right, possibly I move out of Mendoza. There's no one left, Paulie. What are you going to do? The Raiders haven't had the first pick overall since Jamarcus Russell. That was a unique situation. Everyone in the league, 10 teams would have took him number one. 10 other teams would have taken him number two. Mendoza's a lock at number one. He's a good kid. He's got great character. He makes all the throws. Is he perfect? No. But he's about as good as you can be polished to come in and do what Drake May did with New England if you get the draft and free agency right. I don't think he's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, but I think he could be a player that could instantly turn the Raiders around. I would not trade that pick. Make it a no-brainer. Keep Bowers, keep Genty, get him, and buy a new offensive line. Do what the Bears did. Go get 2 offensive line starters with Jackson Powers Johnson and Colt Miller, and all of a sudden you got a pretty good offensive line if you do it right in free agency.
Yeah, it appears to me like the Raiders, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, they would probably turn down the deal unless it's just too good to say no to, because they probably don't want to wait until next year. It's a better quarterback class, JT, but you don't know where you're going to be picking next year in the draft as well. So maybe it's like the pro would be, well, maybe we can get Arch Manning, but maybe you're picking 11th next year and you never know.
Yeah, Mitch, you nailed it. I'm an Arch Manning guy. Would have been fascinating if Arch Manning came out with Mendoza in the same class, because you got to look at Arch Manning as a long-term lock with the DNA and coming in from where he was to probably be really good. I'd go all in on Arch Manning, but the Raiders aren't in that situation now. And Paulie, you made a good point. The Jets are number two. The Jets are highly motivated to move up to number one, but I don't see that Godfather deal. Mm-hmm. I think the Raiders took a lot of pain this year. We all live in Vegas, right? I never expected a season like this, especially when the Raiders beat New England opening day in New England. I thought the Raiders would win 7-8 games, maybe best 9. And then after that, they only won 2 more games. And you're watching the Patriots feast on that easy schedule. Anything that could go wrong for the opponent went wrong. The Patriots eat up and devour that schedule, and now they're playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
What do you think of Sean Payton taking shots at the Raiders, even now?
I'll say this. He's public enemy number one going forward with the Raider Nation. He's a wise ass. All the guy wants to do is drink cold beer with Kenny Chesney on a boat somewhere. And now he's taking shots at the Raiders. And the Raiders, remember, he turned down Al Davis, but he had respect for Al Davis. And I know he has respect for Mark Davis because a lot of those guys do. But what he's doing now, it's what's happening in the rest of the world. Distract, distract. Sean Payton is probably going after Davis Webb to stay. He's taking shots at the Raiders because he wants everybody to forget the fourth down call where he lost the AFC championship game. Sean Payton, follow the money, lost the AFC championship game by not kicking a field goal to go up 10-0. He didn't even have someone standing on the roof telling him the weather was going to be bad coming in there, and he was arrogant. He lost the championship game because he was too arrogant to do what his former boss, Bill Parcells, would have done, take the three to go up 10-0.
Yeah, he wanted to go up 14-0. He said it after the game. In about a minute here, who do you like in the game? What's your early gut feeling on Seahawks and Patriots?
Yeah, Seahawks all day, Mitch. I just think they're powerful. Their special teams will be a difference in this game. Obviously, their defense, they got ball hawks. I think their defensive line is actually underrated. Both offensive lines, I think New England's going to have problems on the left side of their offensive line. But Vrabel's an X factor. Vrabel can change everything with the emotional speech coming out of the tunnel and understanding the long bad bunny halftime. That's an advantage to Vrabel over McDonald. So I like the Patriots to keep it close, but I think Seattle wins and they cover the spread.
Love the fire, my man. Great talking to you, Brick. Thank you for the time.
Guys,
we appreciate that.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Well done.
Follow him on X at JT the Brick on the Progressive Guest Line, Raider Nation Radio out here in Las Vegas. No to a Jets offer.
Watching the Bears-Rams game, Peyton said to ESPN, I can't believe all these coaches that are passing on field goals. And then a week later.
Is that right?
Yeah. He was watching the Bears game with the Seth Wickersham. He goes, I can't believe these coaches won't kick field goals
You're
anymore.
Kidding.
Yeah. And
amazing.
Then it happens a week later.
Absolutely amazing. I'll tell you about a website with so many tools that'll help you become a better college basketball handicapper coming up next on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.